Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
So you see, the youth took up the flag to fight for their elders. And of course, this just galvanized everyone and said, we are with the youth. And it was the largest demonstration ever in Chile.
That's the voice of Venezuelan sociologist Dr. Mary Paez. On this week's show, we speak to Dr. Paez about the ongoing protest in Chile, the struggle in Venezuela, and the indigenous movement of the Americas. So stay tuned.
You're listening to Latin Waves. I'm your host, Sylvia Richardson, and I'm joined with Dr. Maria Paez. She's a sociologist who just returned from Venezuela. I want to talk a little bit about why this is significant, why this moment, this very historic day of October 25th, with 1.2 million people walked out on Chile, you know, not only opposing neoliberalism, but also rejecting this ludicrous notions or theories that somehow Venezuela is the one orchestrating the discontent among the people. Why is Venezuela so made to be the pariah in this situation? What are some of the amazing things that are happening in Venezuela that those who are for neoliberalism are so frightened by?
Well, I have to tell you that there's a wonderful joke going around in Venezuela. And it started with the president. You know, they're blaming Maduro for what's happening in Haiti, what's happening in Chile, what's happening in Bolivia, what's happening in Ecuador. And Maduro said jokingly, yes, all I have to do is move my mustache and governments come tumbling down. So there are little cartoons of Maduro and his mustache flying like Superman, you know, and or people on the street in certain demonstrations with false mustaches on, you know, say he wiggles his mustache and all these things happen, which is ridiculous. In Chile, the Chilean president and his wife were saying those people on the street are Venezuelan immigrants, which of course was laughable. The people on the street were furious with this. Okay, so why is this happening? Because of the example of Venezuela. What was the first thing that Chavez did when he was elected? First of all, he campaigned on it. And second of all, when he was first elected, this was what he wanted to do, change the constitution. We had a neoliberal constitution in Venezuela. And in 1099, they called for a constitutional assembly. In year 2000, out came the constitution. And that is what the people of Chile are asking for, a new constitution. The constitution that Chile has is Pinochet's constitution. And for the two terms that Michelle Bachelet was president of Chile, she did nothing to change that constitution. And so now the people on the street, now I have to say, it was the youth who don't have a memory of the terrible things that happened 40 years ago. But they saw how their parents and grandparents were suffering. And when the fare for the subways went up, they said, we're going to go in there and we're not going to pay. And it started on the subway. But this is the interesting thing about the youth. They were not protesting something related to them. They were not protesting about tuition. They were not protesting about anything to do with their school. They were saying, we are here for our parents and our little grandparents and grandfathers and grandmothers because they cannot afford this and we won't stand for it. So you see, the youth took up the flag to fight for their elders. And of course, this just galvanized everyone and said, we are with the youth. And it was the largest demonstration ever in Chile. Two days, actually. The first one was on the 25th, and the other one was 2 days later. When Piñera was discounting them, he called for a curfew, and nobody listened to him. Nobody was paying attention to him. Everybody was out on the street. And so you know what he did? He called out the famed carabineros. These are the police who, of course, were under Pinochet also, with the tactics that they learned off a school just off Valparaíso. There is, just off the coast of Valparaíso, there is a fort there where they train these police force, and they are being trained by Israel. And Israel trained them in all the tactics that they use against the Palestinians. This is atrocious. This is an atrocious thing that has happened.
I remember Pinochet, but Pinochet came into power in 1973 after a military coup that assassinated Salvador Allende. And this was really the birth of neoliberalism in the region. And when we think about neoliberalism, people may not know what that word means, but they know by experience what it has meant for us in terms of privatization of social services, health, education, water, telecommunications, the increasing dollarization throughout the region that, you know, completely undermines the local economies. So this is really what people are fighting against. This is what people are opposing and rising up against. And the tactics of repression are as ancient, and whether they're trained in the States or whether they have paramilitaries that get sent from the U.S., from the School of the Americas, or whatever their operatives are, the ramifications are deep terror and bloodshed. So this is why this is so alarming. Can we talk a little bit about why then, in spite of the terror that has been historically known among our people, people continue to rise today? Why then do they feel empowered to continue to rise and struggle for a different kind of society, a different way of path, and a new kind of democratic rule that is not this, you know, in paper neoliberal economies that you're describing, but rather one that is for the people, you know, one that is being built from the bottom up?
Well, because it's no longer a fantasy. We used to say another world is possible. Well, that's not relevant. Another world is here. And they can see this. They can see this when they look at Cuba, when they look at Venezuela, when they look at Bolivia, when they look at Nicaragua. It's not a fantasy anymore. It's not, oh, we dream of this. We have seen other countries do it. We have seen Venezuela change its constitution. We have seen the indigenous peoples of Bolivia march on the street and elect an indigenous person, the first indigenous person in the whole of the Americas. So these are enormous examples. And when Obama issued that that execrable decree saying that Venezuela was an unusual threat to the security of the United States, well, It was laughable. It was ridiculous. How could Venezuela, threaten, the most powerful country and army in the world? But politically, yes, Venezuela is a threat. And yes, Cuba is a threat. And yes, Bolivia and Nicaragua are a threat. There would be problems. There are problems always in anything. But you can be free. You can have true laws that are not always on the side of the big corporations, of the multinational corporations that have come like predators to Latin America, that come and eat and spit out people and take the resources and care nothing about campesinos, about indigenous peoples, about the rights, who care nothing if they despoil the environment. Canadian mining companies are outrageous criminals. They go there they are complicit directly in the deaths and tortures of people in Latin America. They destroy the natural resources and then walk away. And then when people come up here to the courts to sue them, they get sent back because the courts say, you didn't prove your case. So I want to tell you something very important as to why, and they continue and they feel empowered. I was invited to the most historic event in Caracas, which was the encounter of the representatives of the indigenous peoples of all the Americas. For the first time, we had in one room the representatives of all the indigenous peoples of the Americas. They were all there, people from Guatemala, from Bolivia, from Haiti, from the islands, from everywhere. And their resolve, as they stood up and each one said what they were fighting about, what they were confronting, it was the same enemy, the same face, representative after representative, the Brazilians, all of them, standing up and saying what they were facing. And here was the most marvelous thing. They then went to the south of Venezuela, right next to the Orinoco, the Bolivar state, and met the indigenous peoples of Venezuela. And together they were there 2 days. And they were resolved, no more will they be ignored, no more will they be harassed, no more will they be killed and tortured. The conquest and the neocolonization will end, and they've created a movement and a Congress, and they will make their first meeting next year in Venezuela, and they are united up on this, that they will not stand by while multinational corporations and neoliberal states go into their lands, destroy their lands, chuck them out, or do worse things for them. This is the new, I would say, indigenous resistance of the Americas against the neoliberal depredation, this savage capitalism that we are living right now. And I was filled with such optimism and such courage just listening to them and knowing that they meant every word. That is a great example. We're going to see now not only the great example of Venezuela, Cuba, Bolivia, Nicaragua, but now the world will see the example of the resistance of the indigenous peoples of all the Americas.
So one thing I think we have learned from indigenous people throughout the world is that the success of all struggle begins with community. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the role of community councils, in Venezuela in this most recent attempt to do, to bring down the government of Venezuela. The people of Venezuela have been suffering many aggressions, economic embargoes, assets being stolen and pirated, and yet they continue to resist. Can we talk a little bit about what it looks like on the ground, how community becomes the linchpin that holds it all together?
Country in revolution, okay? You can't compare it to what's happening here. It's a different society. It's a different government. It's a different attitude towards life. Yeah, sometimes you see this in books. People talk about mass society. There's no mass society in Venezuela. The organization, the grassroots organizations, are everywhere. They are in the cities. They are in the towns. They are in the rural areas. They are in the indigenous communities and villages. So the communal councils are everywhere. I'll give you an example of my sisters. They live in the city of Caracas, 3 million people. They all belong to a communal council within the city. In the rural areas, the communal councils are the ones who bring people together to help them with whatever problem they are having. So, you know, if there is a lack of water for whatever reason, they come together, they find it, they find a way to share it. Then you have the cooperatives. The cooperatives are the farmers who come together and have a cooperatives, you know, sharing tractors and seeds and whatever. And then the representatives of the different communal councils, they elect two representatives, and these go to the communes. And the communes have a constitutional position adhered to the presidency. So they have rights. The communal councils also have rights. If you have a municipality, for example, with a normal municipality you have here with councillors and a mayor. Well, these municipalities cannot carry out projects anywhere unless they are working with the communal councils. And it'll be the communal council will say, oh, yeah, we need roads. You know, we're going to build roads. We were given this budget. We're going to have roads. Well, it's the communal council who will say, which roads are going to be fixed? And where are these roads going to go? So it won't be just the rich who will say, we want our nice neighborhood with new roads. This is an example which I know actually did happen. But this happens all the time. So what I see in Venezuela when I go down there is the opposite of what happens in, and I hate to say this, but this happens in the more sophisticated, developed nations such as Canada, the United States, and Europe, where you see something that sociologists call anomie. Anomie basically means alienation. You see people who are alone, people who don't feel they belong, people who are lonely, people who feel that they are victims. You know, these are the people sometimes that, you know, go a bit mad. These are people who commit suicide or worse. And we see a crescendo of that in our societies. Now, I'm going to go back to something theoretical, which you brought up about community. Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan were they weren't the leaders, but they were the figureheads of this new savage capitalism, of this new neoliberal. They were the ones who would say, the problem is the government. And that, Ronald Reagan said that clearly. He said, the problem is the government, and we have to reduce the government. And Margaret Thatcher famously said, there is no society. There is only the individual. Well, this is what we're looking at right now. The enormous rates of suicide in the rich nations. And you kind of think, how come people aren't killing themselves in the poorer nations? Ask yourself that. Well, if we come back to that sociological, famous sociologist, Dirk Kuyn, one of the founders of sociology, talked about alienation. Well, I saw the opposite of that in Venezuela. I saw people truly believing that they were part of something else, something lovely, something that all around them also formed part of. I took several strolls through the center of Caracas, which is the old part, colonial part. There were lots of soldiers on the street, you know, dressed in their gear. I was with my sister, who has a cane because of her legs. The number of times that these fearsome-looking soldiers would come up to us and hold our arm and help us up or down the stairs of whatever was unbelievable. The courtesy with which they treated us. And I saw the people joking with them and laughing with them and just, you know, they were just interacting with the people, because in Venezuela we have what is called the civic military union. Those soldiers and those policemen are the people, and they identify with the people, and they are there to protect them, not to harass them. This is a whole different ballgame. This is an entirely different concept of what an army and a police is, and you can see it, you can watch it with your own eyes when you go to Venezuela and you see that union Unión Cívico Militar, the union of the civilians and the military. When there was that standoff in February, Guaido was on the other side. He was taken there by the criminal band. And Pence was there, and Piñera was there, and Duque, the president of Colombia, was there. And they were standing there, and they were going forcefully enter Venezuela through this bridge, supposedly bringing humanitarian trucks, which, of course, afterwards they set fire to, and even the New York Times said it didn't have any humanitarian aid. It was full of weapons for street fighting. Well, anyway, what stopped them was the Army of Colombia was there on the other side, and they thought that they would enter. And on the side of Venezuela was the Venezuelan army, the Bolivarian army, standing like a wall. These soldiers in that heat would stand like a wall and not move. But what really freaked out the Colombian head of the Colombian government is that right behind the police, the Venezuelan army, was a sea of civilians backing their soldiers. And the civilians would take wet cloths and go past the lines of the soldiers who would not move. They were just standing there like they were frozen. And the civilians would go and wipe their faces with cold cloths because of the heat and give them a drink of water. This was an amazing sight. Someone's actually done a documentary on this. And again, Venezuela is a different society. It's not just that another world is possible. It's that it's there. Now, there are problems. People can't get spare parts for the car, just like happens in Cuba, because the spare parts are American. These are American cars, and they can't get them. So there's problems of that sort. There's problems with the commercial class. The commercial class is always very greedy, and they have helped with the inflation because, you know, a dozen eggs may cost, $2 today, and tomorrow they'll say, oh, no, it costs $4 today. Why? Because they want to. So they're trying to combat this. It's a little bit harder for them to combat that inflation and that pricing, you know, the gouging of the price. But what I also saw in Venezuela is that the greater part of the commercial small and large industry is fed up with all of this opposition to the government. And they are now collaborating in all sorts of projects with they've finally given up. I was speaking with people on the opposition, and the mood amongst the people who oppose Maduro is a sort of a sadness. They realize now that they are not going to overthrow Maduro, that Guaido is a clown, a malicious clown of the worst kind, that, their leaders have all fled and gone to Florida, where they are enjoying the money that the United States stole from Venezuela and are giving it to them. And they're furious because the money given to them in Florida did not come back to the ones who were over there in Venezuela. So they consider that they have been let down by their own leaders, that the opposition has no leaders anymore. The business of Guaido having taken his picture with these absolutely appalling monsters. These are people who cut people up, who have hundreds of deaths on their head. They took these pictures because that was going to be their blackmail. And Guaido had promised them free rein, because what they wanted, they operate on the frontier between Venezuela and Colombia. What they wanted is free rein so they could pass their drugs through the Caribbean Sea, because Colombia doesn't have an outlet to the Caribbean Sea. So this is an appalling thing for a Venezuelan politician of any stripe to have struck a deal with monsters, with criminals, with murderers. This was the end, okay? The end of Guaido. And they're just waiting for his turn to finish to actually put him in jail. So, again, I come back to your question. What keeps them going? What made these indigenous peoples that I was with, you know, say, no more, no more? They were delighted when they arrived to Venezuela and spoke with the Venezuelan indigenous peoples and realized the Minister for Indigenous Affairs is a full-blood indigenous person, that they have power over their lands, that they have power over the resources of their lands, that they have the constitution of the country translated into their languages. And even if they didn't have a language written down, you know, they found a way in which to create a language so that they could have it. That the indigenous peoples of Venezuela are being honored more than recognized, they're truly being honored everywhere. And so the indigenous peoples of the rest of the Americas say, well, we want that too. This is not a dream. This is not a pipe dream. We have to come together. And by the way, speaking of pipes, I had wonderful conversations with representatives of the indigenous peoples in the United States. The pipelines, they are so against the pipelines. They told us in grave detail what these pipelines have meant for them. Not only that their lands were violated because they just put the pipelines there with practically no recognition or acceptance from them, but the spills, the water that's been contaminated, the children who have been sick and died, their health, even affected the air. So I was really stunned because I didn't know all of these effects that have happened in the United States. And this is what we're fighting in Canada. They go on about the Alberta oil. There's no Alberta oil. There's no Canadian oil. All the oil exploitation in Canada is in the hands of big oil, of multinational U.S. corporations. And they give peanuts to Alberta in Texas, peanuts to the federal government in Texas that are laughable compared to what they are. And they don't care about our environment. And they don't care about the rights of our indigenous peoples in Canada. You know, and you know who's behind all of this? The Koch brothers and big oil. And this is not in the mainstream. That mainstream puts it all on, alienation of the Alberta and a big bad Ottawa. And they're not talking about really who is behind all of this. So I tell you, we have a big problem in Canada, and we have to unite and face this neoliberalism and this savage capitalism, and especially these appalling oil companies that have a stranglehold on Albertans and on the federal government.
Well, you have you. 1 minute to give us your parting words and anything you'd like to leave us
thank
with.
Thank you very much, Sylvia. I am so grateful to you to have called me, because these are the kind of news that the mainstream doesn't want to hear. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you for joining us today. That was Dr. Maria Paez. She's a sociologist and me from Toronto.
We've come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is an internationally syndicated weekly program made available through campus and community stations and available out to the world at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Visit Latin Waves Media to hear previous shows, to access resources, or support our efforts towards social change via community project engagement.